With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, welcome to Good Job, where we interview some inspiring people from the music industry and look at their journey from their very worst job to present day.
I am the worst.
Are you?
I am horrible. I am a perfectionist and I'm horrible in so many ways. And it's both a great feat, but also probably my worst enemy.
Today, we are chatting to the wonderful Mr. Rasmus Andersson. He is a singer, a producer, a writer, and lead singer of the iconic band Diamond Head. Yes, that is right. That is the band that inspired Metallica and Megadeth. And we have a little chat about his journey, what it's like to be in such an iconic band, and I learn a little bit about how to sing metal.
Good job.
We always start with the same question. What was your worst job?
Oh God, I think waitressing was always a horrible job. But you know, it's part of the service industry. Mm. People tend to not care much about people who serve their food.
Did you have to do a lot of that when you started?
Yeah, you know, you got to make ends meet. It's not always easy. You know, there's so many people out there already doing music and trying to find the right way and get a path. It takes a bit of time, you know,
yeah.
Unless you're lucky.
And you're Danish, aren't you?
Correct.
When did you move to London?
2005. That was to do a degree in music, so in vocals and performance, because they didn't have a degree in Denmark that was suitable sort of for what I wanted.
Right.
It was very academic, a lot of what was there. Now, of course, there's CVT there now, which would have been great back in the day when I started studying.
Mm-hmm.
But moved over here in 2005 and studied in Thames Valley University in Ealing.
I guess at that point you had no idea that you'd be doing jobs like this.
Nope.
How did you get into music, like right back at the start?
So I think, I mean, I started rather late. I started in high school, so I think I was around 16 or 17 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to have music as a compulsory thing, and then you could advance to more advanced music. And I decided, well, I'll just try this. And it was when I was, it sort of came around from driving down with my parents to the south of France, and they flicked Queen, Greatest Hits on. And something just happened. I don't know what it was.
It was the same, my dad playing Queen.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I mean, it's Freddie Mercury, so you can't go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But something just happened. My voice just all of a sudden jumped out of me, and I sang for 10 hours straight all the way down to France. And then I thought, huh, this is something. I might try this. And then it just progressed from there.
So do you feel like you were quite a natural singer then, once you found it? No.
Not at all.
Interesting.
I think the one thing I've always had power. I've always been loud.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never cared about what other people think about if I'm loud.
Okay.
I used to play handball at a quite high level in Denmark as a goalie. And, you know, to make your voice heard like so far down the other end, you have to have a lot of projection and power. So that came sort of natural for me.
Yeah.
But in terms of techniques, pitch and everything, you know, I still think sometimes I sound rubbish these days, you know.
I think we all do, though. We're quite,
yeah,
you know, you can be mean to yourself.
I mean, yes, I am the worst.
Are you?
I am horrible. I am a perfectionist and I'm horrible in so many ways. And it's both a great feat, but also probably my worst enemy or worst feature is that how hard I am on myself. So sometimes we need to learn to give ourselves a little bit of a break.
You know? Of course.
But we also, that's what drives us to get better.
Yes, yeah. Of course. Because honestly, I don't know your vocals to begin with, of course, but it sounds great.
I will tip my hat to myself and say I've come a long way. I mean, I remember the first time I had to hit a high A. It was one of the first songs I ever performed live, and it was Stevie Wonder, Don't You Worry About a Thing. And I had to do the lead and hit the top A as a tenor.
Mm-hmm.
And my face was redder than a strawberry. Like, I was about to explode and pass out for the strain, because I didn't know how to function properly in producing that note.
Yeah.
So I remember the challenges of my first top notes, and I remember my challenges at uni as well.
Mm-hmm.
And if I go back to uni and think how I was back then, I wasn't actually a very good singer. I thought I was, But I wasn't actually that good. But that's what happens over time and practice.
And practice, yeah. Practice is the key.
I'm always exploring new sounds, textures. You know, how can I use the tools I have to generate new tools and different things? And that's worked out really well.
Yeah, and especially in the style of music that you're singing in now.
Yeah.
But you don't just do metal, do you? Or you produce other things?
No, I do. I do everything. I mean, when it comes to singing, I do anything from jazz and all that stuff. I love to do jazz. I mean, I've sung in a big band, and that was fantastic, doing all the jazz standards, Sinatra, all of the stuff. And pop, funk, everything, really. But, yeah. I mean, rock and metal is where it's more at home for me. I like to feel like I'm sweating. I want to work out. I want to know that I'm producing some effort here.
Yeah.
You know, I strive to make my blood go, give me oxygen, stop holding this note.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I like. That's a high for me.
So tell me about when you first became part of Diamond Head. How did that happen? And how did that feel joining such an established band?
So it happened in 2014. And it happened through a friend of mine at uni who was then playing in a sort of a side covers band with the bass player that was in Diamond Head at that time. Mm-hmm. And their second singer, Nick, had moved to Australia, and it became just very difficult for the band to function as a band should. So they amicably decided to look elsewhere for someone who was more in the area of the UK, basically, or on the same continent. And my friend Sue, who's actually now in Saving Grace, a band with Robert Plant, she said, give this guy a call. He can sing anything. Thank you, Sue. That's an exaggeration. I think I can sing a lot of stuff, but I can't do other stuff I'd like to get into. But that's practice again.
Yeah.
They sent a track down, and I recorded my voice onto it. It was just a live track from one of their songs, and sent it back. And they loved it and said, come up for an audition. And that was it. You know, the next thing is history. As to how I felt about it, like a lot of people out there, I didn't actually know who Diamond Head were.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they have such an important legendary status, I just didn't know. You know, I knew about Metallica, but I'd actually never heard Am I Evil through them, and the whole Garage Inc. album was sort of, I skipped that for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was just, well, here's a band. This is great music. And, you know, now we've done two albums, one coming out in less than 3 weeks, which is exciting.
Yeah, and you've been writing for them as well.
Yeah, none of the other guys really write lyrics, so I wrote all the lyrics and melodies, etc. for the last record and also this one. But this next record, I've had a lot more hands-on in shaping the whole thing because I've both produced it and mixed the whole thing.
When you realised the legacy of Diamond Head, were you shocked by it?
Not shocked. There was some pressure because you're stepping into some big shoes.
Of course.
But honestly, I think that actually helped me in getting into the band and the songs more, because I realized how important it was. That meant I had to do the songs a lot of justice, and the music and the legacy justice. And that really helped in not only for me to get to know what makes the band great, so I could translate that into now, but also just when we were out touring and all that stuff. You can't really mess around with the songs because it's someone's childhood or teenage years. It's like music is like a time machine when it comes with that massive age of legacy. If someone's singing along, you can't mess up the lyrics, you can't mess up the phrasing, because they will know every inch of how those songs go.
Yeah.
And it's your job to make sure that they get that experience, and you take them back on that time machine. So it was very important that I knew that right, and I think that was both the pressure, but also a very healthy thing for me to become as good as I could be with Diamond Head.
So I guess that's helped you vocally as well?
Sort of. I mean, I don't sound like Nick, and I don't sound like Sean. That's always a taste thing anyways. I never tried to sound like them, but I tried to add small elements of some of their phrasing, some of the stuff that they would do.
Yeah.
Just to, again, add more to to justify the legacy and the music.
Do you do that now with the new stuff, or are you completely new with that?
I'd say I've found more of myself in this new album coming out. The last album was a stepping stone to sort of figure out, even if it worked with me as a new singer, with us writing, are the fans going to like it? Is the press going to like it? We don't know. So it has helped. I bring in a little bit, but on certain notes, there's certain sort of tendencies within the Diamond Head sound, because there is a blueprint to what Diamond Head sound like, and that includes lyrics and how the vocals are. It sort of has to fit down the same path, but we are sort of amicably calling this Diamond Head 2.0 because it's a slightly different lineup. I think there was a guy in the press who made a really cool comment so far, who said this is Diamond Head before the 21st century. And that's cool, but it's going to be up to the fans at the end of the day if they like it. I can only do what I do. And, you know, so far we've had a couple music videos up, and it's been very, very positive. I think there's always doubts. I think one of the best advices that I could give to anyone is sometimes just say yes, even though if you don't know what you're getting involved in, because you never know what's going to happen. And I've got a funny story to tell you about this exact thing. Well, but it was still back in the day, actually, just before I joined Diamondhead. There were some talks about it, and it was about doing a tour in the US back in 2012 or 2013. And I was still doing part-time work there just to make things go around. And a friend of mine called me as I was managing this event in this posh club. And it was about one in the morning, you know, there's a party going on and we're sort of clearing up. But he called me and said, mate, I've got, I'm on tour with this band. We're supporting this band from the US that are on tour over here. We've just done a gig with them and their singer has literally just had a, what do you call it? A diva fit, let's call it that. And just walked out on the tour. So they asked, can you step in? And I didn't even ask what the band was. I thought, yeah, you know what? Yeah, I'll do it. I've got work tomorrow, but then I'll come into the venue. I woke up the next day, decided to just look at what I got myself involved in. And I kind of went, oh, this is going to be difficult. Not only do I have to try and learn about 40 minutes of music in 2 hours. Also, this is technically stupidly difficult. It was proper power metal, so all of this really and all this demanding stuff. It did not go very well, but I didn't really care because it's like, well, they're not paying me. I'm doing this as a freebie to my friend's band to just help them out, see if they can carry on with their tour. Yeah, this was a band called White Wizards. It's very demanding stuff in terms of vocal range and agility.
Yeah, is there loads of distortion-y things in that as well?
There's not as much distortion, but it's basically you've got to think Iron Maiden.
Oh, okay. So very theatrical 80s sort of stuff.
Sort of. It's got that wide vibrato and all that, but all in that top head voice. And a little bit of distortion, as far as I remember. A lot of sections, a lot of solos, a lot of complexity. It's not your standard, well, verse, bridge, chorus, out. There was a lot of roadmaps that I could not follow. And I had an iPad with lyrics and tried to work around it.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
How do you find switching between different vocal styles then? If you are, especially if you're doing a lot of this metal stuff and then you have to switch to, as you say, jazz. Do you find that difficult, or now that you're used to your instrument, you're kind of fine with it?
I actually, when I studied at uni, we had a semester of jazz.
Great.
I actually found doing that semester of jazz and also advanced jazz harmony, it helped my ears. Mm-hmm. But it actually really removed a lot of my natural chest quality voice. I couldn't remember how to activate it. So because I'd sing all like this and all this kind of jazzy jazz,
yeah,
all this stuff, it sort of took away that superpower, actually. And it wasn't until I tried to re-record a rock song for a different module after that that is, well, what's going on? Where is my voice? What all of a sudden it just had to sort of burst out again and to sort of remember what it's like to actually sing in that style. Now it's not so much a problem. And I mean, sometimes I still do like covers bands and stuff like that. You know, it helps make extra money and it's a bit fun. But I actually find that I can easily do 2 hours nonstop of metal singing, but then change to 60-minute sets of various genres is actually more difficult. But
does it tire you out?
It doesn't tire me out, really, but definitely feel like I've done more. And I think it's more because if you're trying to switch between the different kind of stylistic things there are. And again, it depends how you sing. You know, you could always compensate mm-hmm. and just make it easy and not do it true. Living on a Prayer, Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
You could just avoid trying to hit those high notes at the end or the key change. But where's the fun in that?
Yeah.
You want to try and hit the E flats. You want to try and hit the Fs.
Yeah, of course.
It's silly, but you want to do it because you're pushing yourself.
Well, I have to say, when I saw your class at Ultimate Artists, and you were belting these high notes, and I'm a soprano, and I was like, gosh, this is hard. How did you get there?
Well, the thing is, I think the relevant, and this is something I try to talk a lot about with people, especially when I do vocal coaching, is people don't talk enough about the energy of a note. People are talking about pitch, and that's just it. You're trying to find a pitch, but you're not talking enough about how much energy you put into each of those pitches.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I think, where you need to start to get up to those. I mean, we can talk about the belting in those higher notes.
Yeah.
Because obviously in vocal technique, you have your chest range, you've got your mix or head voice. You know, those are the sort of ranges you work in.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just choose a pitch.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's a That's one sound, right? So that's got a certain energy, but you can add more power to that note.
Yeah.
You know? So if I go up and go, yay! Now we're starting.
That's so resonant.
Yeah, that's a whole nother thing we can talk about. But there is a way, similar to in your chest range, when you go into your mix.
Yeah.
So if everyone here watching this knows what a vocal mix is, so it's when you're blending your chest range and your head voice range. So that's what people in metal and stuff do a lot. You know, so when you get to that point, you can easily sort of switch into that. But if you want to add more energy to it, then you have to change a little bit of the perception. So the same thing we know with vowels.
Yeah.
It's the higher you go, they turn into the same sort of vowel shape. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if you try and sing a certain very clear dictated vowel in a top pitch, you're going to falter. The note's not going to sound right. You're going to strain, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But if you know how to shape your vowels right, if you know how to use your mix right, then you can create similar energy in the chest notes, but in a mix notes.
Yes.
So you could say, but
that has energy for sure.
Way more energy.
Yeah, and especially for metal, you need that. Because in other genres, you can kind of sit back and have that slightly, I don't want to say dull sound, but it's a less...
There's just not as much energy.
Yeah.
And you forget in other music, you might be in jazz, you don't need to do it.
No,
because
of course.
It's all relaxed and chill out. But when you're in a metal or rock band, you're fighting with a massive drum kit and a big hard-hitting drummer and probably two guitars that's massively distorted or extended ranges and scales and a bass, you know, and they all have amplification. So you need to find ways to introduce more energy into all your notes.
One of the main traits of metal is the distortions. My background is musical theatre. There's no distortions, of course.
Yeah.
Unless, like, there's the odd, like, growl and something. But in a kind of thing, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So for me, it's so out of my comfort zone in terms of doing it healthily. How would you go about that?
So, like you asked me before we started the discussion, if CVT was my background, and it's not my background, but I think CVT has really bridged that controversial subject a lot into more popular use and mainstream because of how they've approached it with the science and the research, and that's fantastic.
Yeah.
So CVT basically explains it in a very simple way. You have to compress the sound, and you do that by narrowing the space to which the sound can resonate out.
Yeah.
Once you actually start to understand these kind of concepts, you almost find there are many different ways you can compress sound to create different tones. So to everyone who doesn't know what an epiglottis tongue is, but it is the sort of tongue-shaped thing that covers your windpipe whenever you eat or drink anything so you don't get the stuff in your lungs.
Mm-hmm.
And by using that little piece or that little tongue, you can either narrow the space, which is where you get sort of that extra energy, and they refer to it as belting as well.
Yeah.
Or you can actually do the opposite, which is what death metal and these kind of more growly people do, which is more advanced, where you actually focus it and make a bigger space.
Yeah.
So with distortion, like we talked about energy, it demands a lot of that physical power.
Yeah.
So what you want to do is try and figure out exponential, gradually, how much energy can you put into each note the higher up in your chest range. If I'm just going, it's there, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah!
Yeah.
You can feel I'm shaking.
Yeah.
I'm physically shaking. So besides having to add that extra energy to it, I also just tip that glottis tongue back.
Yeah.
And you can do various exercises to get to that.
Yeah, because how do you feel that?
You want to try more of those witchy sounds. What you'll find is once you start to add that, even just without adding the extra energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It just adds more of that gravel and touch because it becomes that compressed. Sometimes you have a bit of saliva there and that adds a little bit more growl and that kind of tone and texture. But it's completely up to people to mess about, have some fun and do some of these sounds.
Yeah.
Because that's what's going to teach you most out of everything. Just make sounds and experiment. Yeah,
great. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Pleasure,
this
Beth.
It's been a pleasure.
Good job.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered